It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Today is Earth Day. So what have you done to help the planet? Did you place your recyclables by the curb for pickup? Drive to work in a Prius? Maybe you biked or took public transportation. While daily activities like reducing energy usage and buying eco-friendly products are helpful, is it enough? Our next guest feels we might have more power to help the environment as citizens than as consumers. Michael Magnatis is a professor of political science and environmental science at Allegheny College. He also serves on the advisory board of the Story of Stuff Project, which promotes sustainability. Michael Magnatis, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hey, Paul, thanks for having me. We've got a lot of alums and friends of Allegheny College down in the Pittsburgh area, and I know a lot of them are listening. So thanks again for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. And if our listeners have a comment or question for our guest, you can call us at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is essspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at essspgh and follow the conversation at #EPLive. So, Michael, only 15% of people, according to the latest Harris poll, live a green lifestyle. Only 15% here in 2013. Why is that?
Well, you know, there are a number of reasons. I mean, that 15% is focusing on folks who I guess we would think to be hardcore green lifestyle folks. There are a much larger number of us who are doing our little bit where we can, a bit of recycling here, a bit of green consumption there. But to really stay focused on the green consumption life is both difficult and expensive. You know, our life tends to be set up for us to sort of push us to non-green behaviors when we're spacing out, as most of us are doing most of the time. And being able to live green all too often can be a very expensive proposition financially, even though it may be better for the planet and for our kids in the long run.
If you've gotten well into your middle age and you're not necessarily being green and you haven't done it and you haven't gotten into the habit of doing it, is there a danger with some people that, well, this is the way I've been all my life, it's too late to change now? I guess the question is it ever too late to change?
Oh, gosh, no, I hope not. I mean, I'm in my mid-50s, and I hope I'm able to change sort of day to day. I think the issue, at least from the work that I and others have done on this, is not so much folks who aren't sort of trying to live that green lifestyle. I mean, large proportions of the American public say the environment is important and they want to sort of do their bit. You know, it seems to me that the challenge here is that most of us, when we think about, you know, how to do good by the planet and by our kids, are automatically sort of drawn to those 10 easy things lists that really tend to proliferate around this time of the year on Earth Day. And while those things are so important to do, you know, it's important to ride your bike when you can or use less energy. Those things together do not appear to have as large of an impact on environmental problems as we might think they do. So while it's important to floss and it's important to walk little ladies across the street because that's just the right thing to do, I think it's really important that I'm clear that I think it's important as well to do these small and simple things because it reminds us of some of the important things in our lives. But these things together have far less of an impact than marketers, environmental groups or governments might often say to us. And so there's a problem here, I think, in part with folks who care about the environment being perhaps bamboozled a bit.
You're an advocate for making environmental change through citizenship. And while a march on Washington can make a statement, what other ways can people speak up and exemplify sustainability?
Yeah, I'm so happy you asked this because when we look at environmental behaviors and as we see that most folks who care about the environment, you know, principally try to do good by voting with their dollar. When you ask them, well, why haven't you thought about other ways of getting at these environmental issues? They often say, well, you know, I'm not an activist. I'm not someone who walks around picketing. And so the first part of my answer to your question would be that we probably all want to be aware that there are many ways to be a citizen. There are many ways to engage these issues sort of outside of conventional or maybe stereotypical activism. And along these lines, your viewers might want to go to that video that's up on your website from the Story of Stuff. It's at storyofchange.org that talks about half a dozen different ways that folks can sort of become involved in a more of a citizenship role with their friends and neighbors.
And what are some examples of that?
Sure. Yeah. No. You know, the bottom line would be, I think first and foremost is that folks have to sort of figure out what their passion is. So if you care about food, then great, go for agriculture. If you care about energy, wonderful. If waste is something that sort of or toxin leaves you waking awake at night, then focus on that. And then I think we want to do what we can in our own lives, but then use that as a springboard, and this is laid out a bit in the website, use that as a springboard for trying to figure out what's going on in your community. You know, it's easier to get involved in things when you're working with neighbors, when you're connecting to community. So, Paul, like, for instance, if food were your thing, you know, I'd hope you'd eat lower on the food chain, maybe do a bit more cooking with your family and friends. But then the next step would be to sort of find out about farmers markets in the Pittsburgh area, maybe see how you can help a couple hours a week or expand community-supported agriculture. I think what we find from a politics standpoint is that when people are working with folks with similar passions in their community, that kind of citizen work actually is renewing. People get more and more excited and often become more and more engaged. And so what initially seemed like kind of a hassle, how am I going to get involved around an issue, becomes actually a great pleasure.
So you're saying that that you know, you don't necessarily have to do it all. That if energy is your thing, you can build and live in a solar house, and but you don't necessarily have to compost.
Yeah, I you know, that would be the view of this Story of Stuff project, and many of us now who are trying to figure out how to tap this consumer interest, this simple things list interest in the environment, and sort of build that out. So often, you know, these environmental issues can be overwhelming, and folks feel like they've got to be perfect. You know, they've got to be pristine, and you know, that's a bit of a fault of those of us, myself included, in the environmental movement, who sometimes maybe wag our finger a bit too much at folks. But now the bottom line is, pick one thing you really care about that gives you some energy, that you worry about, that you want to know about. Do that. And if you need to let the rest of these so-called environmentally appropriate behaviors fall by the wayside, I think that's okay.
We're talking with Michael Magnatis, professor of political science and environmental science at Allegheny College. He also serves on the advisory board for the Story of Stuff Project, which promotes sustainability. And we have a link to the Story of Stuff on our website at wesa.fm, so you'll want to check that out. Do you have, in addition to some of the things that you've outlined, do you have ecological and economical examples for the average person who doesn't have time for traditional activism?
Yeah, I sure do. You know, this consuming green on its own is not a bad thing. But again, if folks were to go to websites like the Global Footprint Network, which is at footprintnetwork.org, they could type in what they're doing, and they could see that that many things that we're told that will save the planet really won't have that much impact at all. But the things that really do have impact, the big three, would be energy use, would be agriculture, and sort of would be waste. And so, you know, if you're looking to sort of get the most sort of bang for your buck in terms of your work, you'd want to try to make your homes and your buildings as energy efficient as possible. And where you get real payoffs is when you're efficient in the use of electricity. That can have a really, really big impact. You know, in terms of food, eating lower on the food chain is something that we often hear about. It's better for the environment, and it's surely better for our health. But then again, to be able to use that as a springboard for perhaps getting involved in community supported agriculture, connecting with good people at local farmers markets. And then finally, in terms of the waste issue, which really tends to attract lots of folks' attention, you know, we're all sort of taught from an early age to recycle. Well, actually, what we're taught at an early age is those three R's, right? Reduce, reuse, and recycle. But you got to kind of scratch your head and wonder whatever happened to the reduce and reuse. And so what we're seeing in a number of communities, and we have many folks in Pittsburgh who are thinking about this well, is that in addition to recycling, you know, maybe we can be thinking about ways about removing bottled water from our workplaces, for example, or perhaps copying other communities to think about a small tax on plastic bags that might amplify our individual efforts to sort of get some institutional political push, you know, away from things like toxic plastics and waste that litter our streets.
If you'd like to join the conversation with Michael Magnantes, professor of political science and environmental science at Allegheny College, you can call us 412-246-2002, the number to call. Again, 412-246-2002. Do you find it challenging to live a green lifestyle? That's one question that might be a jumping off point for discussion here on Essential Pittsburgh. 412-246-2002, our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm, and you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at #EPLive. Michael, is it enough to lead by example by walking or biking to work or volunteering to plant trees on weekends? That kind of thing?
Well, you know, I mean, this is always a tough one for folks like me, because the last thing I'd want to be heard as saying is that, you know, I'm judging other people's sort of lifestyles. You know, I'm barely keeping my own life together. I wouldn't want to be telling other people how to lead their lives. I mean, certainly, you know, walking or biking to work or doing these other things are just great because it's, you know, it's great for your health and you're plugged into community and that sort of thing. But again, you know, these efforts alarmingly seem to be really an ant on an elephant's behind in terms of you know, their impact on the environment, sort of versus you know, the overall challenges we face. And then additionally, and this is, you know, this was a tough one for environmental groups in the last 20 years or so. I think many of us working on these issues sort of thought that if you know, if I were to bike to work and then Paul, you were to bike to work and we were to get some of our friends to bike to work, that we get kind of a copycat phenomena going on. You know, people would see us and then they would want to do it. And then before you know it, we're all biking to work and we've dealt with some of the transportation problems in the region perhaps. But that copycat sort of effect, you know, really doesn't seem to work as well as we thought. I think in large part because, you know, many of the systems we live in sort of make it again hard to sort of do these sort of green behaviors. And so if we're trying to do these green behaviors in structures or systems or politics that make it hard to do it, it's like driving with the brake on, you know, pushing the gas pedal and the brake at the same time. So we're not moving very far. So, I mean, I'll give you one quick example. Many of us sort of push really hard on recycling, and that's important to do. But we're and that's an individual sort of act, a consumer act. But we're not going to really make a huge impact on the waste problem until we get laws in place that require manufacturers to have a minimum content of that recycled material in the products they make, for example. Or we need to be reducing subsidies for new virgin material that disadvantage the use of recycled material. So doing those small things are great, but unless there are kind of larger changes that happen, that we can make happen as citizens, unless those larger changes occur, we're always going to be sort of swimming against the current when we try to do these green behaviors. It would be so much better if we could set up systems so that acting sustainably is as easy as falling off a log, as opposed to something we have to continually be thinking about and vigilant about.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Margot in Highland Park with a comment. Margot, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Just growing up with parents who grew up in the Depression, there are just a lot of things that I think we've kind of forgotten that not only are good for the environment, but also just save money. For instance, you know, well, this wasn't even Depression era stuff, but like the things that we used to put in our windshields in our car to keep the sun out before everyone had air conditioning in their car so your car wouldn't be so hot when you started it up. Because people don't use those anymore. You start your car up, they put on the air conditioning really high, and so that's a huge cost right there. People aren't, you know, whether houses are insulated, so yeah, it's an upfront cost to insulate your house, but then you get incredible savings on your heating bills after that. And then just as far as incentive regarding businesses and what they can do to help out, there's a lot of things they're doing in Europe, which I'm not quite sure why they're not coming to the United States, just with packaging. I mean, some stores, even whenever you buy things, you can recycle the packaging in the store and just pack it in your car. And so I guess my question is, what kind of incentive is there for companies to do that here in the United States, if any?
Oh, thanks, Margot. You know, lovely set of questions. I mean, the European-U.S. comparison is such a good one because we often sort of think that in some ways in the U.S. we might be "quote unquote" behind Europe because maybe we don't care about the environment as much, or we don't know as much. And actually, Americans' set of environmental values is actually higher than in many European countries, and our concern is actually higher than in many European countries. You know, to go to your examples, I think that what we see in Europe that we don't see in the U.S. is that Europe taxes energy, and so there are some real incentives then for smart businesses trying to be competitive to minimize energy use and maximize consumer satisfaction, and so that plays out in terms of packaging. And then in Europe as well, we also see this really interesting phenomena that we're beginning to see in places like California, but it's not across the U.S. right now, which is called extended producer responsibility. And what that essentially means is that when a manufacturer makes a product, it can be a refrigerator, it can be a bike, it can be tennis shoes, or it can be smaller items with packaging, that they're the ones that are responsible for the final disposal of those products. So it's just a shift in incentives. Rather than making like the city of Pittsburgh responsible for figuring out where to throw this stuff away after we put it out on our curb, the manufacturer is responsible. And there are a variety of ways in which that responsibility is expressed. But what it does is that then it makes smart people in business who are very smart and creative figure out how they can produce and package products with minimum impact, maximum recyclability, and sort of minimum toxins. And that, I think that's a great example of where Europe and the U.S. are different. In Europe, we see some of these incentive structures in place that are fairly simple in form, but once you put them in place, they shift the creativity of business in directions that then can really lighten our environmental impact. But, you know, final point, we can't make those incentives happen by shopping green at the market. We have to make those incentives happen or other things like them by coming together as citizens to help business and government sort of see the wisdom of some of these design changes in how we do business and govern ourselves.
Margo, thank you for that phone call. We appreciate it. We have a tweet from Diana on Twitter. She says, What does eating lower on the food chain mean?
I'm sorry, Diana. I guess some people thought
Deanna.
It probably meant you.
It's Deanna.
Deanna. I'm sorry. I guess some people probably thought it meant like squatting down low at the table when you were eating. No, I'm sorry. Eating lower in the food chain means rather than eating meat, one is eating sort of grains and vegetables. As many listeners may know, may be aware, it takes about 10 sort of calories of grain or vegetables to make 1 calorie of meat. And so every time you're eating a calorie of meat, you're really eating 10 calories of grains or veggies that you could be eating directly. So eating those veggies or grain then frees up lots of other possible food for other folks and reduces the need to do intensive agriculture. So it's really just saying, hey, eat less meat, eat more grains and vegetables, and think about where our food comes from.
One last question for you. Are people sold a bill of goods on how going green will save them green? In other words, you know, you go green, you save green, you're saving money. Are people really saving that much?
Well, you know, that's a great question, and I would encourage people, I think, to follow up with some emails to me if they want to learn more, and I can send them, you know, a bit of info or point to some links. I think that in some ways, as Margo just sort of mentioned, you know, there are lots of ways in which we can become more efficient in our homes, in our autos, in our lives, and we can save money. So there are these so-called green activities, Paul, that will definitely save us money. The question of sort of smart economics and frugality, I'm totally down with that. I think the issue is really, are we being sold a bill of goods around the notion that if we do these things to save money, that it will also have, you know, a pretty big or at least even significant impact on these environmental issues we face. And I think there, that's where I worry that perhaps we're being sold just a bit of a bill of goods, that a lot of these green products that will save us money may not have that much of an effect on the overall sort of environmental sort of conditions we face. Might take bigger stuff, changing rules and laws and structures. And again, as was pointed out a moment ago, there are lots of models when we look to Europe and elsewhere.
Michael Magnatis is a professor of political science and environmental science at Allegheny College. He also serves on the advisory board for the Story of Stuff project, which promotes sustainability. We have a link to that on our website at wesa.fm. Michael Magnatis, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Paul. Do appreciate it.
Coming up, we'll look at how the Earthquaker Action Team is protesting PNC's financing of mountaintop removal coal mining when Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.